Hello and welcome to Political Economy with Preeta Punj. We are nearly towards the end of 2024, and what a year it has been. This has been a year of general elections and crucial state elections, the year when India gave the Modi government its third term, a year when India has continued to retain its position of being the fifth largest economy in the world. India has also remained a stable economy amidst rising global uncertainty. But there were some surprises in store. Growth fell unexpectedly to 5.4% in the July to September quarter, its slowest pace in 7 quarters. Inflation has also remained above 4%. Private investment and consumption continues to remain subdued. So, what is 2025 looking like? What could the budget entail for the Indian economy? And where are we in terms of policy certainty in terms of taxation? To discuss this in greater detail, I have with me Mr. Rajeev Emani, Chairman of EY India. Mr. Emani, many thanks for joining us. I have to begin with the most obvious and the first question that comes to our mind. It's when you look back at the year 2024, there's so many conflicting signals that come from the year. What are the big events that have stood out for you? And what would you like to see changed in 2025?
Okay, so I thanks a lot, Shweta. I would say at a high level, 2024 has been, in terms of economic policy, a continuation of what we have seen in the earlier years. From a government standpoint, I think their focus on macroeconomic discipline, whenever they get an opportunity to reduce fiscal deficit, I think that has been there. Reform journey continues, and the broad themes under which reforms are being carried on continue. Some of which I think government has been more effective in implementing, and some of them probably because of either political issues or maybe it'll take more time to get some of them implemented. I think one can question the speed of implementation. One thing that happened in 24, the big event in India, was obviously the elections. And the elections had an impact on the economic growth, as is visible in the last quarter GDP growth numbers. A lot of Indian economy spent was being front-ended by government CapEx spend. I think the great thing that this government did was really to enlarge the quality of fiscal deficit, really improved as more and more of that money was being spent for CapEx. So some of because of a few months, 2 or 3 months before the elections, I think that CapEx started slowing down as most people were anticipating. But it took more time to pick up than what people thought it will. Part of it was also to do with the seasonality issues that we had, which was a very long summer and a very long monsoon, an intense monsoon. So I think that impacted the delay, and caused the delay because of which I think the CapEx spend stalled. So I would say overall, from a government standpoint, the broad themes of macroeconomic discipline, of ensuring that banking sector continues to be well protected, big focus on inflation because that has an impact, and that balance between inflation and growth is a matter of debate. Ensuring that Atmanirbhar Bharat is constantly getting more and more encouragement, looking at building out the India stack more and more on technology and how do they rely on technology. I think those themes broadly kind of continued.
And in 2025, any big changes that you're hoping for? Because we also saw, I would say, and data says that too, that consumption has not really picked up. Private investment continues to be a bit subdued. What are you banking on to see this turn in 2025?
Yeah, I think for 2025, my at least my view is that once the government capex starts playing out, the economic growth should accelerate. There is a lot of bullishness in the US from an economy standpoint. So hopefully that will also have a positive spillover effect in some sectors in India. I do hope that we start seeing some signs of interest rate reduction, although it's not easy to predict. But this challenge of inflation really being caused by agri products, food products, so much more supply side on the agri side. You know, how does interest rate play in that? Because that's what is impacting consumption. And I do hope that manufacturing starts picking up in a more and more meaningful way. We are seeing early signs, especially in sectors like electronics, defense, engineering. I think things playing out, but I would say even more and more labor-intensive sectors. If we can see more action on the manufacturing side, I think things should look up well. I think technology sector should be doing better than what it did last year because of the you know, the uptake in, especially in the US, which is the largest part of the demand side from a technology sector viewpoint. So I would say that you know, really the thing that one would want to see change is government taking more steps on the manufacturing side. And I think one of the things that's causing I mean, private capex is happening, especially in newer sectors, but the acceleration is slightly slowed down because of the activity coming in from China. And if the government, I would say, takes a more proactive stance on how do you deal with you know, low cost imports that come from China, whether in terms of anti-dumping or anything else, I think that will help in once there is clarity on that policy. I think that will help in encouraging more and more large-scale private investment, especially in sectors like steel and others. The more you know, some of the if we can make some more reforms, PLI schemes in the labor-intensive sector. So ELI, employment linked incentives. I think that is the other thing, because eventually I think the more employment that we can create in India, the greater will be the economic activity. So I would say, yeah, I mean, those two, three things. And if we can probably have a more aggressive stance on disinvestment, that gives more fiscal space to government, and in some ways also helps in creating greater room for capex spent by the government, reducing the fiscal deficit, and therefore having a more positive impact on interest rates and capital availability with the private sector.
You know, you said that there's need to focus on manufacturing, on giving manufacturing a push. Do you think the business environment in India at the moment is conducive? Are we do Is there enough ease of doing business? Is there enough stability in the taxation regime that you know, companies would be interested and they would get the return that you know, that they would hope of by expanding their manufacturing capacities?
Yeah, so I think these are, I would say these are not moments of where you feel you've achieved something, but I would say if you compare it with stability in taxation over a period of last 3 years, I would say things have definitely improved. On ease of doing business, things have definitely improved. Now there's much to go there. India still, you know, still has a lot of room to improve, but definitely things are moving in the right direction. Are people getting the right returns on manufacturing? Yeah, I think there is a muscle memory of on ease of doing business, on manufacturing in you know, in India, that because of which you know, sometimes especially from a foreign direct investment standpoint, things get stalled. So if I look from a domestic standpoint, I think it's much more demand-led. It's not so much to do with taxation, ease of doing business, and everything. It's much more on how they see demand, and do they think there is disruption likely to come from China, and are the government policies going to be more consistent over a longer term? so that
Sure.
they can take the big manufacturing. In terms of FDI, that's where ease of doing business comes in a more bigger way. In for domestic business, ease of doing business slows down the expansion because if land acquisition is going to take so much of time and everything, it slows down speed and sometimes it adds to cost. But it's in FDI which has been constant over the last 3, 4, 5 years, almost stagnant. Big number, but stagnant number. I think there, things like, how proactive are we from a taxation standpoint, in providing comfort in some areas, and also ease of doing business. Whether it's in terms of enforcement of contracts, acquisition of land, number of approvals that have to be taken. I think if we can find a way that it can be speeded, and this is both center and state, then it will further give greater impetus to manufacturing. For those people who have set up manufacturing, for those multinational companies that have set up manufacturing in India, or Indian companies, I think returns are generally quite good.
Okay. So, do you think there's a case to give demand a push in this budget, like a direct push in this budget? Is that something that the government should be looking at seriously?
Yeah, I mean, the question is definitely, I agree with you. I think there should be question. The big question in this is how.
Yeah.
So if you, I mean, government's view is that if you do anything to give a push, that will stick on. So it's not something that will go away. So for example, during COVID, when subsidy was given, wheat subsidy of 10 kgs, it was very, once COVID was over, it was very difficult to withdraw that. Okay, 10 kgs became 5 kgs, but it becomes very difficult to withdraw
Absolutely.
the grain subsidy. So anything that the government does, I think they are very mindful that once they provide it, it's very difficult to pull back. So if you make such a large provision and you're on a fiscal deficit glide path, which is to go down, then I think it becomes difficult. But I definitely think that if they can reduce, at least in the lower income bracket, if they can reduce the income tax, personal income tax rate, I think it creates a little bit more, demand impetus. If they can give, I think if we can look at more simplification and rationalization in GST rates, at least for some products, I think that will give, for example, there's no reason why some product like cement, I mean, I don't want to talk of a particular industry, but should be taxed at 28% when most of that consumption is for housing. And
Right.
housing is one of the highest multiplier impacts. So I would feel that if they can make some of those tweaks, definitely it will give greater impetus from a demand standpoint. Obviously, interest rates coming down, as we know, some part of the income is also going away in higher interest rates. So if interest rates do come down, it creates a greater impetus for consumption and doesn't cost the government. I think provided they feel confident about managing inflation.
So, we started this conversation by saying that this was also the year of the elections, and India has is going to have it will be going through a third term of the Modi government, which is a stupendous opportunity for any government to really push through reforms that have been on the back burner for various political reasons. So, in terms of the tough reforms, Mr. Memani, what would you like to see the government really focus on in their third term, and maybe they could set the ball rolling in this budget?
Yeah, I think honestly, I don't feel that there are any big reforms. I mean, there are some reforms that have a more they have more political noise around it. We saw that in terms of farm laws and everything else. I think if they can bring it in smaller way, not the full thing, but in smaller way, I think that would be good. Labor reforms, again, if states, they can encourage more states to implement it, even if not in the entire state, but in pockets. I think that would be very helpful. And then there are reforms that are relating to ease of doing business, which honestly don't require that much of political will. I think most people will not have a political reason. But
Right.
that's where I think it more, the more we can lean on simplicity and trust, I think, and it goes both ways. I think it's incumbent on industry also, as well as government, to ensure that we are encouraging that behavior. I think the more ease that the entire layer of ease of doing business will be very important. But factor labor reforms are important. Also, just availability for manufacturing, availability of more parcels of land so that it's easier for people to acquire, you know, large pieces of land at affordable prices for setting up manufacturing, so that the cost doesn't go out of whack. I think that's also, I would say that's also something that they should look at. So, you know, disinvestment is something. I think privatization is something that I think, you know, it'll be very good, but the government may find it difficult, except maybe some of the banks that they're looking at privatizing. I think hopefully they can complete that process quickly. That creates lots of efficiencies in the system. But disinvestments, if they can do in an accelerated way, I don't think it's a large reform. It's just accelerating and executing some of the things that they have announced. In terms of employment, I think the internship scheme that was announced, obviously it's facing some issues. The number of people applying for it and everything, but if again that is something, if they can tweak and accelerate that will be good. The Anusandhan scheme that was announced would have 1 lakh crore allocated to it to actually implement that and make that functional will be very important. So I don't think that there are that many of big bang reforms. I think within the art of possible, there are lots of things which can be executed better and more efficiently. I think that's what will give the results. And I, you've not talked about tax reforms, but I
I
think
was
the
just
direct
going to
tax
come to
reform will
that.
be
Yeah.
important.
Yeah, I was just going to come to that. You know, this was announced by Ms. Sitharaman in the budget that she presented this year. So are we expecting something to come through on the promise of an overhaul of the direct taxes code of the Income Tax Act? What are you hoping for and what's your expectation?
So, you know, as you know, that the government has set up an internal group and they are evaluating or putting together their thoughts. They have also invited comments from public, and they have broken those questions into four buckets. One of it is, you know, suggestions that lead to simplification of laws. The second is suggestions that lead to, you know, taking obsolete provisions away. Suggestions that will lead to reduction in compliance, suggestions that will lead to reduction in litigation. So they have broken this all these suggestions into four parts. I'm hoping that once they receive the feedback and they start working on this, you know, they will start putting together. And there's a lot of work that's already been done in the past. So I think there's a lot to learn from that. It will be good to, I think, good for them to put the entire new Income Tax Act together. I think we will see snippets of that in the budget, and some things that are obvious, I think, will come through. I'm hoping that at least, and we can discuss some of those things. But I would say the draft bill of sorts, or the draft Income Tax Act, you know, having been part of the process, it is a complex process, and they may want to put it to a committee or something like that. So it may take you know, some more time than the budget date before they're able to bring it. So I think it should hopefully happen sometime between this budget and the next budget.
But what are the changes that you're expecting to come through in this budget, the small ones that you mentioned?
No, I'm firstly, I think from a tax rate standpoint, I'm hoping that the personal tax rate does come down. The second is that if they can find ways in which disputes, you know, number of disputes that are coming into the judicial system or the CIT appeals. CIT appeals is where the biggest clog is there. If they can find a way to do dispute resolution or create schemes of dispute resolution, and the existing ones they can have that they have, if they can increase thresholds of that, then the number of disputes that are clogging the system come down, so that at least people have an opportunity to settle before that. The third is, you know, the alternate dispute resolution mechanisms. I think they have to be strengthened. whether it's advanced ruling systems, whether it was the APA mechanism that was set up, various mechanisms, they are not, I mean, they are working, but they are not working at the speed, scale, and efficiency at the, as they should. Advanced ruling was when foreign companies came in, they wanted some certainty, they applied for advanced ruling. Idea was that they'll get a ruling in 6 months. Things have been pending for 6, 7 years now. Likewise, APAs have almost 800, 900 cases of pendency. At an average, you are getting, things 200 to 300 cases get solved every year. They have to find ways in which it can be efficiently dealt with. So people feel that these mechanisms of alternate dispute can help in reducing. Likewise, I would think TDS simplification is an important piece, withholding tax simplification, TDS simplification. Excuse me. Also, not-for-profit taxation is something that is creating a lot of concern. So whether in the new bill or in the existing one, I think they should try and address it. It's becoming very complex. If they should address how
Any
not-for-profit
specific
taxation,
areas? Any specific
no, I think
behaviors
it's,
that
whether it's in terms of, how much money, when it has to be spent, what speed it has to be spent, how do you deal with not-for-profit schools, educations versus for-profit medical institutions and everything. I think it just requires an overall, people have to go for registration every 5 years. There is the sword hanging. So I think we should look at all these things in a, in some of which obviously government has put into plug some this things that were getting misused. So I think that that is one area where I think they need to look at, whether they look at here or excuse me, in the new bill. I think that's something that has to be, that has to be seen. I also think I've been I believe that a lot of wealth creation has happened in India. A lot of people want to direct it towards philanthropy. If we can find ways and means of making efficient way consistent with what happens in most of the world, of using some of the wealth created for not for personal gains but for philanthropic benefits without creating a tax event, I think that will be very helpful.
All right. Very quickly, your last comments on GST, the way we see it in its current form and the way it was envisaged. Even as we speak, there are a bunch of memes doing the rounds on increasing taxation on used car vehicles, multiple taxes on popcorn. So what's really going on with GST, Mr. Mimani? It's just seeming like this very complicated piece of taxation that completely runs opposite to, making doing business in India easier, with the
Yeah.
goal of making doing business in India easier.
Yeah. I think GST has been one of the biggest tax reforms that India has seen. And I think the level of change and automation that the government has done to achieve GST is really credible, is very credible what they've done, especially in terms of automation and everything else. I think from a one of the I think the two challenges that the government is facing, one is obviously there is some level of misuse that has happened, especially in terms of credits that have been utilized which shouldn't have been availed of. So I think the second is states are also under a lot of revenue pressure to, and as you know that most of the states have announced lots of schemes, so there's a lot of revenue pressure that's building up in states also. And then there is the mindset, right or wrong, I think they're both sides of the argument that if a shoe that's sold at for 500 rupees and a shoe that's sold for 50,000 rupees, should they be taxed at the same rate? And there are some people in the government who believe that their tax rate should be higher for those people. And there's the other side that, if the rate on that is 10%, I'm just using that. If there's 10% is no rate, I'm just using for simplicity. Then you're paying 10% on 500 and you're paying 10% on 50,000. So the numbers as it is are quite different. So So when you add up all this, I think where the government seems to be going is, I think there is the ability to take the bet of reducing the slab rates, going for more simplification, and keeping things simple may look, to create some more revenue challenges. And there's a lot of resistance, I would say, not only from the central government, but there's a lot of resistance from states also in doing that. But I strongly believe that the more simple regime that we can create, the greater will be the level of compliance, the greater will be the level of ease of doing business, and greater economic activity and greater revenue collection. So I
Absolutely.
think if the government can lean and maybe move towards a basis where, yes, they have to protect any kind of evasion that happens, but keep things simple. Then maybe three slab rates without distinguishing, and you can have some additional duties for sin products or whatever else it is.
Sure.
The if they can do that, then I think it'll become much more easier to implement, and I'm very confident that the revenue collection will also be higher. Maybe there will be some pain for a few months, but I think it'll accelerate. The consumption will accelerate.
Right, absolutely. So.
And finally, I would say is that the big challenge in GST right now is, which the government needs to address, is the if I'm a company that's operating in 15 states, do I really need to get 15 assessments? Can I just get assessment done by the center and maybe one more state to make things so that, and the other states can follow that? The kind of notices that are coming through, can there be adequate safeguards? Those notices don't get they just are not raised. Show cause notices are just not raised at a junior level, but people think through that, and there is enough chief commissioners and others who are involved before those show cause notices are issued. Also, just setting the entire administration, whether it's in terms of the entire GST administration, whether it's in terms of the way assessment is done, the way audit has to be is being done, the number of agencies that come at a company at a when the assessments are happening, the way we deal with disputes, same thing being interpreted differently by different states. I think that's creating a lot of confusion. So one is obviously the rate side of it. The second is this entire the assessment side of it. I think both require some level of handling, and especially the second side. I think that requires, from an ease of doing business, from a competitiveness standpoint also. I think if we have too much of multiplicity of rates, it'll lead to issues.
All right. Okay, thank you so much, Mr. Mimani, for that very insightful conversation and great feedback coming in from you on what the budget could really look at. And I think now is the time, and I personally firmly believe that the third term of the Modi government could be very defining for India and India's growth trajectory. And like you said, that the devil lies in the details. And while the big strokes have been done, now it's sorting out these nitty-gritties that really need work. Thank you so much, and wishing you a fabulous 2025. And we hope that India also sees a glorious 2025. Thank you very much for
Yeah,
joining us.
thank you, Shweta. Wishing you all the very best.
Thank
Very
you.
happy New
Thank you.
Year.
Happy New
Thanks.
Year to
Bye.
you too. Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Thanks.